Welcome back to the Recess Podcast, the unfiltered podcast for aspiring entrepreneurs.
We are back where it all started. We started Recess in Chicago last summer at Millennium Park Plaza, right by the Bean. Remember that? It was, what, July, and now we're over a year later, and finally in Chicago once again. This is the first time since.
Yep, back good. In person. It's been a whole summer. We graduated in May, and it is now September 19th. So it's been a long time since we've been an in-person podcast. We had a couple this summer, but it wasn't like no solo pods, really.
We did none. It was all interviews. All the last several podcasts are with other people. We haven't done anything where it was just us two, except for like some of those Zoom ones.
Yeah, so this podcast is a little bit different than a normal podcast in the sense of that we don't really have like a key concept to touch on today. Not one that where we're talking about, like, you know, one specific thing that you can do or how to do an internship or how to make the most out of your summer or key takeaway
like
from this
PowerPoint
or
presentation.
Not even to like interview someone that's doing something cool. It's such an open-ended podcast, but I think I hope there'll still be some takeaways at the end.
Oh, there will be.
And just takeaways from like our last couple months where we've, you know, been away from the pod, been away from each other, been away from school, been away from everything really, and kind of doing our own thing.
And just catching up too. Like, we're now sitting in my apartment that I just moved into two weeks ago, and now Jacob's up here visiting. And he just got here yesterday. So honestly, it's good to be in person and catch up after so long.
Yeah, so candidly, what was this, a couple weeks ago, we kind of had a talk like, do we want to keep doing the pod? Do we want to quit? How we feel about the pod? What are we doing? It's weird because being in college, especially for us, like doing the podcast, you have a lot of people that listen to this podcast go to U of I or went to U of I, right? There are people that were, you know, listeners from all around the world, but the majority, like the critical mass of those listeners, were from University of Illinois. And so being there, seeing all the people that are listening and talking to them on a daily basis, you kind of hear feedback, right? You say like, oh, that podcast was good, this one was not, like this one I really struck me, like it really meant something when you said this, or I took this away, or this was interesting, you said this, what do you mean about that? And we just have conversations about the podcast, and you felt like it was kind of a two-way conversation. So post-college, it's not been like that, right? Like, when you first start something, people are
hyping you up.
Will say something like, yo, good job doing this. This is cool. This is that. But then after a while, like, it just kind of comes routine, right?
Becomes so the expectation.
People don't respond to every single podcast you do, right? And so post-college, it kind of feels like you're shouting into a void. Like, you're just saying things, right? And, like, who's hearing? I don't know. Like, on our Spotify stats, yeah, it says that people are listening.
That's the weird thing, dude.
Who
that
are
we
they?
Have people,
right?
Now that we've posted around 80 episodes, a little bit more than that, the SEO is finally caught up. Where now Spotify is starting to show our content to people who we don't know. And we're getting people who comment from like Nigeria on our actual Spotify. But we're not, like Jacob said, having two-way conversations with these people. So first of all, if you're one of those people, reach out over our Instagram at Recess Podcast. Like, we'd love to hear from you. But like you were saying, yeah, there's not that two-way street anymore.
Yeah, and I've talked to other people. It's like that with a lot in any content creation, really. Like, to some extent, you're kind of just saying things. And we talked about this with Jason Levin, who is a content creator and makes his living off making content. It's different because you don't know who's listening. And 90% of people listen, they're not going to like, they're not going to comment, they're not going to say anything, but they hear it, right? And so months down the road, they're going to say, yeah, I've been following your content for a long time. You're like, what? I didn't know that. Yeah. I had no idea because they don't. I mean, I go on Instagram, right? I scroll. I never like anything. Mm-hmm. Never. It's just not me, right? Most people aren't like that, right? They're not going to comment on a podcast or a post or a newsletter, but they're listening, right? So that's something interesting that I took away is like, it's hard to have that like feedback type of thing and to feel like you're actually even like people even care if you're like saying something, right? So we're just sitting in a room like talking to ourselves, right? And that's what it feels like.
It is interesting. And then all of a sudden you will see someone after a while and they're like, oh, you get in a conversation and they're like, oh, I loved your recent episode on XYZ. And I'm like, whoa, I had no idea you actually listened to that, right? That is one thing I've noticed. So yeah, we graduated in May. It's now September. And so we've probably had some realizations of like, okay, what is post-grad life actually like compared to college, right? I still have a month before I start work, so I can't relate on a lot of those levels, but I have had a lot of experiences that are like, wow, there's pros and cons, definitely. One thing I've noticed is the friends from college that I've met up with here in Chicago, they work all throughout the week, right? Monday to Friday. And then finally on the weekend, they have a little bit of time to meet up. And so I'll meet up with these people either for like whatever it is, a pregame or lunch. And there used to be this abundance where in college, everyone you know is within a mile of you. So you could see everyone like every day. And so the conversations are like, oh, like what are you up to? Like school? Like you know what's new in their life every day. Whereas now you're actually catching up with them because you haven't seen them in weeks. So there's a lot more to talk about. The conversations feel much richer. And I feel like I've had more engaging conversations with the same people in college, but post-college when I don't get the chance to see them every day, you know? So that's been interesting.
Yeah, I think because in college, like it's such a norm that you're with someone all the time. You just take it for granted, right? You have so many opportunities to do anything you want. You have so much freedom to do whatever you want. You take it for advantage of it, right? Like it just doesn't mean as much to you, right? Like you have a couple hours, you're just going to like chill out and sit on Instagram or whatever. But if you just have like a couple hours at night, every night to like after you get off work, to like do whatever it is that you actually want to do, you either do one of two things, right? You either do nothing and just like veg out because like you're tired all day from work, or you like say, this is like the last little bit of time I have in my day, I'll make the most of it, right? And so in college, it's not like that because all the time you have is basically free, right? You could go to class, you could not go to class, you could, there's no real like strict timeline. You have to do anything. So you have like all the time in the world to do whatever you want. It's mm-hmm. such a different life because now it's like you have to be here to here from like this time to this time. And so like you got to do whatever, like you got to do what you got to do. So like now the rest of the time is like there's so much less time. So you got to make the most of it. It's interesting.
Totally agree. Like for me, I haven't started to work, of course, but seeing like both of my roommates, Evan and Ariman, they come back very late. They leave every morning very early. The amount of time that they actually have in a day to do things is so little. And I know that's why I'm like trying to value this time that I have a lot more and actually making use of it. Like literally, Evan wakes up at like 3:30 so that he can go to the calisthenics park at 4 a.m., get a workout in, and then do a little bit of like coding for a few hours before work starts, because that's the only time he actually feels like he has in the day. Because then you come home from work extremely exhausted. You just want to kind of sit down, you eat dinner, you shower. You maybe go to a happy hour with your work friends, and then by that time, it's like already night. So it's about how you spend that time that's like very limited post-college.
I think this scares people, right? Like they're coming out of college, and maybe they have a summer, and they're like, the rest of my life, I'm going to be able to do nothing about what I want. And so what do? They go to Europe, right? Like, if you've been lucky enough to graduate college, like you're not in mountains of debt because maybe your parents saved well or they had good jobs or whatever it is. Like most of the people that we know, like the average salary of a family of someone that went to like the College of Business at U of I is like four times the like average populations, right? Mm-hmm. So people like that are so much better off than like the average person because they, you know, they have a 4-year degree. They're not sitting in mountains of debt. Like most of them aren't, or if it is, it's not as big. They have good paying jobs at a college. And so they have a summer where they're like, this is my last free summer, right? So they have the freedom to like go to Europe. And like mm-hmm. everyone I know felt like was in Europe. Like I just go on Snapchat and like, it's like Europe, Europe, or Instagram. It's like everybody just had like trips all around the world. And like, I think that's awesome. I just think for me personally, it was like a different mindset that I wanted to have because for me, it felt like the mindset of like my life's about to be over for the next like 40 years is like maybe not the right mindset. And that doesn't mean you can't go to Europe and like have a good time, like whatever. But like thinking of it that way of like, oh, my life's over from now on is like,
yeah,
maybe right. A limiting mindset to some extent, right?
I feel like a lot of people do talk about it using that kind of terminology, like, oh, like college is over, best 4 years of my life, now the grind starts and life's going to suck, so that's why let's get it out of the way and go to Europe. I acknowledge the break. Like, there is several months here that it is a transitionary period between that total freedom in college versus this different level of freedom when you have a job, right? A typical day job. And so I'm like, okay, if I do want to travel, and that's something that I value a lot, now is a great time.
It is.
And
it
so
is.
I did get lucky enough where I had the opportunity to go to Iceland, Amsterdam, France, some of these places. And
how many countries did you go to this summer?
So I first took a trip with friends. We traveled around in an RV in Iceland. Have plenty of stories from that. Went to Amsterdam, London, and Norway in that trip. And then the second trip was with family. That was Paris and then down to south of France, like Monaco, Nice, that whole area. And then I came with you in Austin where we got to do a bunch of those pods. But it's weird. I had different kinds of outcomes from those trips that I wouldn't have imagined. Like, for example, after coming back from France, I have been obsessed with Napoleon and the Napoleonic Wars in general. Like, look, you can look literally look behind my bed. I have the Coronation of Napoleon painting now. And this is not something I would have expected going into it. And because of this, I've learned a lot about his military strategies, his different kinds of leadership stuff. And now I can apply those to the business that I'm working on and other things. So it the outcomes of that France trip hit me in different ways than I wouldn't have expected previously. So I think that's common with traveling, where you get all these different perspectives just by seeing different parts of the world and opening up your worldview, that I think there's lots of benefits to it. And I felt like this was a good opportunity where there was a little transitionary period.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to disparage on anyone that has the opportunity to go to, like, somewhere really cool and travel and experience it. Like, that's awesome. Like, you should definitely take advantage of that if you have that opportunity. What I'm saying is, like, just because you have that opportunity doesn't mean that, like, the rest of your life is going to suck and totally. You have to make the most of it. Like, you should make the most of every moment, but that not because the rest of your life yeah. is going to suck. You should make the most of every moment because you have that moment. Like, think of it this way. Rohan, if you were to wake up tomorrow with $10 million, would you take it?
Yeah.
What if the next morning you didn't wake up? Would you still take the $10 million?
Nope.
So that means that waking up is more important than having $10 million right now.
Boom.
And for everyone, it's the same thing, right? Like, every single day is worth more than $100 million, whatever it is. Like,
hopefully, most of the time.
Right? And so if you have that opportunity to wake up, like, every day should be like that, right? And so having this mindset of, like, oh, life's going to suck when I have work. No, you have the opportunity to, like, make a lot of money and, like, go learn a lot and do things that people around the world only dream of, right? Like,
totally.
Most of the companies that people, like, get out of college are, like, 2% acceptance rate. Like, yeah. So low that it's lower than, like, most of the major schools. And so the opportunity you have is, like, just insane. So making the most of it is, like,
so I've now moved to Chicago. I've been here for 2 weeks, and I'm experiencing a certain lifestyle. You are down in Champaign, actually, but you've graduated college. What has that been like? And I don't think you've ever talked about on the pod of what your decision-making process around that was.
I have not, I don't believe. So a couple things. I had the opportunity to work fully remote for my job, which I was blessed with. And technically, I'm grandfathered into my firm's old way of doing things because now they require people to be in 60% of the time. So wow, I'm lucky. I'm lucky on that situation. But I think of it this way, right? I had the opportunity to live in Chicago or live in Champaign, right? I could live with my parents or I could live in the city. Living in the city, I would spend a bunch of money on rent. If I went and ate anywhere, I'd spend a bunch of money. Basically, it was money, right? If I live in Champaign, I'm basically, like, away from all my friends that, like, graduated college the same time as me because they're all, like, mostly all of them are living in Chicago. So I was, like, two sides of the like, coin. One was, like, friends and one was, like, money. And for me personally, it was a hard choice. But, I mean, for me, like, a lot of my friends are going to be working a lot. And so, like, really, am I going to see them that much? Not really. And, like, I'm a couple hours away from Chicago. So, like, it's not that hard to come. Like, I'm visiting right now. And I'm, like, come to work, right, whatever. So, that's not the end of the world. But I thought of it in this way, right? I'm giving up a little bit now for a lot later. Because, you know, every $1,000 now that I save on a rent, $1,500 maybe is what it probably would cost in Chicago. If I'm saving $1,500 a month on rent, that $1,500 over 12 months is like almost $20,000. And so $20,000 a year, that's like just that
even much. A lot for 1 year, because you can move up to Chicago next year if you wanted.
But I could move there tomorrow if I wanted to, right? Yeah. I have the flexibility versus signing a 1 year lease. Like, signing a lease and, like, I just don't have any flexibility because if I want to leave tomorrow, I can't. If I end up hating it, like, I can't leave. So living at home is, like, not ideal because, like, you don't get to experience life in the same way as you would as, like, living on your own. So I also acknowledge that. But I think for me, it's, like, for a couple years, like, money is worth so much more now than it will be later. Mm-hmm. And if I invest $20,000 a year for the next 2 to 5 years, like, I'll just be that much closer to financial freedom. And like realistically, in 5 years, that's like $100,000. $100,000 invested now is like so much money that I can be closer to like my goals of where I want to be. And so it was kind of like a decision that I made where it's like giving up a little bit now for a lot later. You know what I mean?
Because there's that conflicting debate of like people say, yeah, it's good to have money later, but why do you want money when you're old and your bones don't work and you can't explore and travel and things like that? So you spend your 20s basically having fun, stuff like that. So you're kind of more on the side of
delayed gratification. Yeah, but it's not about like when I'm 60. It's about when I'm like 35,
yeah,
right? Because if I can like financially retire by the time I'm like 35,
mm-hmm,
then like...
You still do anything that a 20-year-old can do.
Exactly, exactly. And so like I still want to have experiences that like you can only do in your 20s, but I think there's different experiences for each like period of your life, right? And so in your 20s, like, you know, maybe it's extreme sports or like crazy adventures that you couldn't do otherwise. And I can still do that if I'm living with my parents. Mm-hmm. Like I can just go for a month or something. And I probably have the more opportunity to do that because I have extra discretionary income that I would be spending on rent every mm-hmm year, right? So, I mean, it's like every decade or every period of life, however you want to break it up, it's for a different thing, right? Like when you're 60, you're not going to be doing extreme sports, right?
Yeah.
So maybe you look at it in a way of like, what are the things that I want to do in my life? And like breaking it up that way and then say like, what point in my life is the most optimal to do that, right? So whether it's like, I keep saying the extreme sports, maybe it's that. Maybe
extreme even on sports, that line, like it's not like just living in Champaign means you can't do extreme sports. You can come up to Chicago whenever you want. Literally this summer we did wakeboarding in Austin. But
yeah, I mean, even it's Chicago, not
like
you're
actually losing out on that many opportunities.
Just right, and so like the crazy living or like nice, like whatever, like maybe that's a 30s thing. Maybe that's a 28 thing, right? So like what I'm saying is if you break up all the different things you want to do in your life, like you want to have time for like living with all your friends and like whatever, maybe that's college. Maybe it's, you know what I mean? And so if you take all these things that you want to do and put them in a period of your life where like, I'm not going to be 60 and going like ski boarding or like snowboarding or skiing or like whatever it is, right? I'm not going to be parachuting out of airplanes or like doing crazy stuff.
I will be.
But I might 60. Be doing that in my 20s is like more ideal. And so if I do those things at 20 and I can save up money so that when I'm 30, I can live in a nice house with my like family and I have like nice school my kids go to or whatever, and then like when I'm 40, you know, it's just like breaking up in that way to where I'm setting myself up to like over a long time period instead of saying like, oh, I only get to do this in my 20s and just like forgetting about everything else and like saying, yeah, whatever, like that's fine.
So what does your, because you don't have many distractions then being in Champaign, and also I've learned, that's another realization I've learned over time. Originally my plan was not to live with roommates. I was very set, you remember this, I was very set on living alone in like a studio or a one bedroom. And I was like, I want no distractions. I want to spend this part of my 20s just grinding. And then I ended up living with Evan and Ariman, who have been very inspiring roommates to be around. And I've learned that like distractions is also a choice. It's a mindset. Like if I let people be or let activities be distractions, they'll become it. But so for you in Champaign, let me guess your daily schedule. You wake up, you go to the gym, you eat ground beef. You read about real estate the rest of the day. What else do you do? And then you DJ at night. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, my daily schedule is pretty rigid to some extent, but it's also pretty free for the, like, also. I mean, I work, like, 9 to 5, basically, right? So I have, like, I'm doing during then, but, like...
So you just started work also, like, last week, right? How about before that, this entire summer, when you were not in Austin? What were you doing?
I mean, I was just working on my business the whole time, basically. Like, every waking hour, I was mm-hmm thinking about it in some capacity. And I would, like, hang out with people, for sure. And I'd, like, go out to dinner, or I'd, like, whatever. But for the most part, like, every waking moment, I was, like, thinking about it. And that's just the way I am. Like, yeah. I'm just, like, obsessive about stuff, which is, like, good and bad, right? So, like, I'd wake up at, like, 6 a.m. every day, go to the gym, go home, eat breakfast, and, like, work. And then, like, maybe, like, take an hour or two, like, go play pickleball or go play golf or whatever it is. Like,
you used to hate on pickleball so much.
It is a very geriatric sport, but now that I feel
geriatric,
old,
wow.
Yeah, now that I feel old, it's like, whatever, I can do that.
But now you feel old? You're already hitting your 60s?
I'm about to hit 24, dude. Now I feel old.
There you go.
But anyways, yeah, it's like, that's kind of my lifestyle. It's very different than like if I was living in the city. And like coming back to the city, I was like, wow, I miss this place. Like, it's so much fun. But it's like there's a time and place for everything, right?
Exactly. And like you said, like you could come up here whenever you want and just hang out for that weekend. And that'll even make those weekends like feel even more special because you know it's like the scarcity of it, right? Like I've been living in Chicago and I still probably haven't explored as much as like I could have being here because I don't think of myself as a tourist anymore. It's like, oh, I live here. Like, what is there to explore kind of thing? For me, my schedule has been very different than usual. So at least this week, Evan's kind of convinced me. I've been waking up at 5 a.m., going to the calisthenics park, even though like I don't have work to go to. And my mornings feel so productive. So I spend the first half of the day on my new business that I've been working on. And then the second
half of
the day...
Which is named what?
I don't want to say right now.
Stealth mode, okay.
The second half of the day has been spent on something very interesting. I haven't told you about this yet. So a few weeks ago, I was looking at the back of a Cheeto bag. And it said
the way every great story starts.
and I always see these like stats on nutrition labels of like unsaturated fats, trans fats, saturated, polyunsaturated, monounsaturated. I'm like, what does this even mean? And so I called Grant over, the natural next thing to do, since he's one of the most intellectually curious people I know. And I'm like, dude, let's go down a rabbit hole and figure out what this means. And I learned about the science of lipids and fatty acids and what this stuff actually means. And I'm like, whoa. Then I realized I want to learn everything there is to know about health, nutrition, biohacking, fitness, sleep, things like that. And so I decided, and so then I started to map out my life priorities because I'm like, all right, a healthy person wants a million things, a sick person just wants one, right? And more recently now I've known that I have like family heart problems and so I want to actually take care of my health more. So I mapped out on Notion this database of three things that I value, just three: health, relationships, and finances, or money in general. And basically, I'm going one category at a time, and every topic I can think of related to that, to learn about it, I'm basically writing an article on each of those. So for example, I've mostly been starting out with health, and then done a little bit of finance, and then not as much relationships so far. But like, for example, with the health section, I've broken it down into sleep, nutrition, water, fitness, mental health, personal hygiene, and other biohacks. Then even within those, I have like a whole bunch of subcategories and I've continuously made these articles about them. And I realized that so many of these things, think of just sleep. I don't actually know anything there is to know about sleep. I've never actually done research on it. I've just heard, oh, sleep 8 hours and do XYZ and you'll be fine. But I've never actually like studied what this stuff means, right? Hydration, oh, just drink water, 8 cups a day, you'll be fine. I didn't realize that we sweat out sodium chloride and potassium and magnesium, and we actually need to replenish our bodies with sweat, not just water, and how coconut water and Powerade and Gatorade actually don't replenish us with enough of those, right? These are just things we like take for granted, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to study this a lot. And so the second half of my day has been spent a lot of time on writing for these different kinds of categories, and I'm building up like a massive database of just things I find interesting related to health, relationships, and
what's the biggest change you've made based on the things you've learned?
Man, dude, there's already been so many. One that I'll give you is water. I didn't really realize how bad tap water was. I thought it was fine. We were using that the first few weeks. Then our apartment, we ordered something called Zero Water. And basically, it's like a water filtration device, like a Brita. But apparently, there was a bunch of lawsuits saying that Brita isn't as good as it claims to be. And so I was looking into this along with Evan. And we got this little device that tests basically all the different particles that are in water. So that's like the salts and especially heavy metals and fluoride. And we found that this one tracker showed the tap water had 178 ppm, which is parts per million of these heavy metals. And the water we were getting from this filter basically had zero. And the differences between that and what those heavy metals can actually do to your body and how it can cause cancer and things like that is like astounding. So I thought, okay, if I'm trying to work on finances or relationships or anything like this, if I can't take care of my health, how am I supposed to take care of anything else, right? And this is a long-term game. If we want to be doing those paragliding and shit when we're 60 years old, we got to take care of our health.
Very true.
So this has been something interesting that I've also been doing. And so it's been, I don't feel like I have distractions while I'm working on this, which is kind of nice because everyone else is out at work. And so, like, I'll forget that my friends work sometimes. I'll call someone up at, like, noon, be like, yo, you want to get lunch? And they're like, sorry, I'm on a work call. And I'm like, ah, I totally forgot. So it's kind of nice in its own way.
So give us a high level on your business then, what you're doing for the business.
Okay. So basically,
He's going to say the two words that everybody wants doesn't want to hear. What, unless what? You're a VC. B2B SaaS.
B2B SaaS. Basically, it is a software that helps to automate small business marketing without the use of social, without advertisements, basically. So it helps them. Basically, it's a set of tools that gives them automation so that it removes manual work that they have to do, and it turns them into these client magnets. Where basically, they'll be able to rank higher on Google, get more reviews, and be able to manage their whole CRM and lead system a lot more
efficiently. So what's like the main thing you've been doing? Have you been selling? Is that the main thing you've been doing?
Yes.
The product that you have?
Yes. And that's another thing I've gone down rabbit holes of. Like, sales is hard. It's a lot of fun. It's very rewarding when it's done right. And I've realized that it's not something you're just like born with or not. It's something that, kind of like we talked about in the charisma episode, that I think anyone could develop if you understand some of the psychology behind it. And it is just fascinating.
When I learn like very little things, like very minute things about sales, I see them everywhere.
Yeah.
And so I know you've said something about like the buck versus the dollar. Like mm-hmm. you say like $20, it's like, yeah. Oh, this is another me. $20 sounds like a lot more money.
Oh yeah.
And so I hear people be like, yeah, it's like somebody was trying to say something was like really expensive and they're like, yeah, it was like $1,000. And I was like, yeah, it doesn't sound that much. But if you do that $1,000, it sounds way more expensive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's so much psychology. So
like all those tiny little things, even just like the words you use or the tonality in which you say it is like crazy about sales. And like if you can sell something, like nothing else really matters. I mean, the world is sales, right? To yeah. some extent, right?
Dude, exactly.
You're selling yourself. And then not in like a weird way, but like
sounds funny when you say it like that.
But like you are, right? Like, okay, think of it this way. Like if there's some widget some company's selling, right? And nobody really knows what it is or what it does that much, but like they use it every day. It kind of becomes a commodity, right? Because there's no brand to it. It just is worth what it is, and like another company can just replicate it by like using a 3D printer or whatever, right? So this widget, like, it's just worth, it's like a commodity. It's just worth what it costs to create it, plus like a little bit for labor or whatever. So you're just like breaking even, right? Versus something like Versace, right?
Oh, yeah.
Say, I mean, even if you take like a starter, like Fila or whatever the heck, like some Walmart brand versus Versace, like the public perception of that, like the shirt probably costs like very, very similar to make. Very, very similar. There's nothing really special about the Versace shirt versus like the shirt you can find in Walmart. The difference is like the brand recognition and the way people view it. Dude. And like you and me are like pretty much the same thing, right? Like we were talking about earlier on the charisma episode, like nowadays pretty much everyone is like relatively similar in terms of like their capabilities due to like
AI,
different technical tools you can online employ, resources to learn online anything. Resources. You somebody versus with a college degree versus not having a college degree. Like, you learn pretty much everything I learned in college online.
Easy, Harvard has 100%. Free computer science
easy,
courses.
That just like that. And so the difference between me and someone else in terms of our technical skills is very minute. Like, I could be a little bit better at this. They could be a little bit better at this. But really what makes someone stand apart is, like, the brand that you have and the brand that you hold and the way people perceive your value. Not actually about the value you actually have. And so selling yourself in that sense and, like, is so important.
Totally, dude.
Right? And so sales is, like, such an important thing to learn.
Going back to something that we talked about earlier, like the thing, random things I learned from traveling that I didn't realize. When I was in France, I saw this firsthand. Everyone on the streets of Paris, Versace, Burberry, Gucci. And I'm like, what is going on here? And a lot of those companies are based over there. And so I started to actually observe, like, how do these companies brand themselves in this kind of way that makes like their bottle of perfume so different than like a cheaper bottle of perfume, right? It is fascinating, just the concept of branding. And like you said, we've been selling ourselves for a long time. When we are trying to get a job somewhere, that's selling ourselves. We are trying to convince someone else that we have some value that'll fill a gap in their company, right? Or in their life.
When you're like 13 trying to be popular, or when you're like 16 talking to the first girl, you're like,
oh yeah, it's all branding and sales.
When you're 21 and you're in a bar and you're trying to talk someone across the bar, like it's all the way you sell yourself.
When you buy $14 Nike Elite so you can look cool in front of your other friends, like it's all branding and sales.
It is.
So that's been neat. Even just like the way I've had to pivot for the sales process, started out with a lot of cold emails, cold calls, still doing that stuff, going in person to different kinds of businesses. And I would find different kinds of challenges. Like the main problem I actually had at the beginning was not convincing people that I have something that they need. The few people I talked to that actually were decision makers were convinced. It's getting in front of the room, getting face to face with those decision makers. Originally, I was pitching to restaurants. I would walk in person all the time. I would always come face to face with the actual employees and people that had no say. They'd be like, oh, email this person, and then no one wants to see another sales email, so I would never hear back. So then I had to completely switch. I got an Instagram account that now has 18,000 followers, and I didn't get those myself. I got it for free from someone else who used to be their old account. And now my response rate is going up way more, just because when I direct message businesses, they see a certain brand. They see social proof. And so there's some of these concepts that are like so pivotal to sales, and I've been learning over time through a lot of obstacles. And it's definitely been discouraging at times when, like, the biggest thing I've heard is you're only going to find yeses in the land of no's, right? So you have to go through enough no's to find those yeses. So little Sunday night motivation.
Yeah, for me, I've been working a lot on leadership, yeah. I would say. For me, I have two interns now working for my business. For anyone that doesn't know, I don't know if I've really talked about it on the podcast.
Which business?
Really.
Nonprofit?
The real estate business. Okay. I have a couple small apartment buildings now as of this summer. And really, like, I've been trying to build out a team, mostly just like in a mentorship capacity to some people. And so I've really been focusing on like how to be a good leader for them. And one thing I've really been focused on is called situational leadership. And it's basically like you can draw like quadrants and you can say like how good someone is at something on like the x-axis, and on the y-axis is how comfortable they feel doing it, right?
So good is like skill level and quality, and y is comfort?
No, x and y. So like sideways. Sorry, and across. So yeah. There's four quadrants, right? So so there's like very like they don't know what they're doing, and they also don't feel comfortable doing it.
Okay.
They don't know what they're doing, and they do feel comfortable doing it.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they're doing, but they don't feel comfortable doing it. And then they know what they're doing and they feel comfortable.
And this is for the leader or the people that they're leading?
This is for the people, right?
Okay.
And so the way you lead a person in each of those four quadrants is different, right? So the person that knows what they're doing and feels comfortable doing it, you treat them very, very differently than the person that doesn't know what they're doing and doesn't feel comfortable doing it. So you kind of go through, in any process and anything you learn, you kind of go through like through each of the phases, right? You start at not knowing what you're doing and not feeling comfortable with it. And then as you start to work on it, you start to know what you're doing, but you still maybe not feel comfortable with it. And then you get to a point where you do know what you're doing, or you feel more comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you finally get to know like actually what you're doing and you feel very comfortable with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so as you go through that loop, the person who's like leading you has to do a very different job of leading you in each of the different positions. So like in the first position, what you really need to do is like training. So you train them on how to do it so that they can learn the skills. And then once they start to learn the skills, now you're trying to focus on like coaching them and like helping them through and making them like understand both like the skill process and from like feeling comfortable.
So is it not linear where the more that they know and the more skills they develop, the more comfortable they get in the role?
Not necessarily, right? Because it's not directly correlated. Because the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know.
Yes, that's another big
one. And so that's the thing, right?
The knowledge paradox.
So at each point in this like situational map, you find yourself like you need a different thing. So you like finding out where that person is on the map and like how you can help them as a leader is like very important. And one of the biggest issues that comes with this is when I think, say Rohan, I'm leading you in some situation. I'm trying to help you out. You think you're at a different spot on that map than I do, right? You think you know the answers, but you don't. And so you feel really confident, but you're like, don't actually know what you're doing. And so I have a different view of where you're at in your journey than you do, mm-hmm. right? And so that's when there's conflict that comes up and where you have to deal with that. But just knowing that like idea of situational leadership, it's kind of hard to explain like in a conceptual way.
No, I think
way,
you explained it pretty well.
But if you look at it on a graph, you look it up online, you can see it. And you can even see it, like it doesn't matter if you're a leader or you're someone that's being led, right? Like having that knowledge of that kind of progression in any type of thing you're trying to learn, if whether it's playing soccer or whether it's doing discounted cash flows or whether it's like becoming a math whiz, whatever it is, you go through this process. Some go through it quicker or slower, depending on the skill, depending on like their propensity for it, whatever it is. But understanding like how you can help someone out in those situations is really important. Mm. And so like whether it's, you know, you need to teach them skills, or whether it's you need to give them confidence, or whether, and it's, some people would begin to backtrack on certain things. You know, it's just, yeah, it's a very interesting concept. And leadership in general, there's so many different ways to look at it.
So many nuances.
And so there's different like frameworks you can use in those situations, and like which framework's right, which framework's wrong. It's hard to know, right? It's hard to say for like for certain which is best and which is wrong. But just like kind of using one framework and learning that and using it, and then taking another one and doing that,
and seeing then like building them on top of each other, and then pivoting,
and then like building them on top of each other, and seeing like using it in that way is like kind of important. So
totally agree. Like when I was a project manager and like operations director for Illinois Business Consulting, I remember first for my like team of seven, I would always do 30-minute meetings with every person on the team, because I'm like, oh, this is equal treatment for everyone. Everyone gets to 30 minutes. Then I realized, okay, maybe on that same quadrant that you're talking about, there's people who don't need 30 minutes and it's a waste of time. And then there's people who need 2 hours. They're not getting enough time. And so I was like, okay, let me switch from like this equal framework to a more like equitable one where everyone is getting the attention that they actually need and deserve, you know? So at first it was like, oh, the traditional approach is what everyone else is doing, which is just strict 30 minutes for everyone. But then I was like, okay, wait, no, I have to adapt and give certain people more time than others based on that. Like, kind of like what you're talking about, situational leadership, where everyone is in a different place and you have to figure out which place they are in order to help them the most effectively.
Yeah. And it's also very interesting of like, you know, how do you convey your dreams, your mission to someone and get them on board with it, right?
So
like,
hard.
How do you get someone with a totally different ideology of things they want? How do you get them to align with you? And then how do you align incentives with them so that they're incentivized to work towards your mission and it's still benefiting them, right? And so all these different things, it's just difficult. And then finding people that are even have the propensity to doing well, have the drive to even care about doing well, it's just like a very, very interesting process. And like people talk about leadership all the time and it's like you don't actually learn it instead of you're doing it. And there's a bunch of artificial ways to feel like you're doing it, like in a bunch of clubs and college, like it's just a very strict set out way of things of doing things. And at that point, you're not really leading anyone. You're just like doing a task and like people are just following you because that's the way things are done. Right.
Dude, I agree.
I've seen that so many ways and people are like, oh, you get leadership by like this and this and this. And like, you can definitely learn from that, but it's not the same you would get as actually doing it and learning from just like doing it yourself.
Totally agree. The buy-in thing you brought up is like a huge one. It's like a parent expecting the babysitter to care about the baby as much as the parent does, right? Like,
yeah.
No, if this is your business, it's your baby, you're going to care about it the most. So first, it's managing expectations that your employees or your interns are not going to, just naturally, it's not their dream. This is not what they've always wanted to do, maybe, right? So that's definitely one thing. But the second thing, like you said, the principal agent problem, which we've talked about in a previous episode, of aligning incentives so that they are actually on the same page and you're working towards the same goal and not conflicting goals is like another big one.
Yeah. And it doesn't always have to be financial, right? It's not just like pay them more to do a better job. Like that definitely does work in some situations, but it's not always the right thing. Right. And so for me, what really helped me and is just really truly understand what that person cares about and wants, and then building incentives that work more towards that. Right. So for me, for example, you know, working in a real estate business, I look back on myself when I was a freshman, sophomore, junior in college, and I wish I had someone that was a couple years ahead in the real estate business doing stuff that I could learn from and have exposure to all these different things, so that now, once I'm out of school and working at, like the summer full time on building a real estate business, I would have seen all these things before and not had to do it like going in blind and doing it all by my, like, trying to develop a property on a lot that I don't know if it's legally allowed to be or zoning allowed to be developed on. Like, I've never developed a property before. And if someone I'd known before I could work with. So the learning thing is, you know, very important. And so if you can find people that, you know, they care about learning and exposure and experience. And yeah, they might care about money a little bit. But like, if that learning and stuff you can give them without giving them the money, like, you can still give them money, right? I'm not saying you don't pay people. But like, what I'm saying is finding out what like people care about, and then maybe saying like, these are your values, these are how I can help you get those while also you helping me. And it's not like
it's back to sales right again.
Dude, it is. It's sales, right? It's sales. Leadership is, I mean, sales. It's like you can't just say like, oh, go do this.
You're selling a vision or you're selling some sort of
I mean, you probably worked a job where you're just like the manager's like, yeah, do this. And you're like, why? For what? And it's like, you're not bought in, right?
If you don't understand the big picture.
It's like when you're a little kid and your parents are like, go to bed. And you're like, why?
Yeah.
If they can't like explain it, they can just say, because I told you so. And like that works for just so long, right? Yes. It doesn't actually totally work in the end. And so truly to get people along with your mission and to follow you and to like actually making something work out, you need to have that type of buy-in. And in order to get that buy-in, you have to like almost sell every project you're doing to someone and then leading them on the process to get there.
Dude, I remember like start of college, I would like read these books and watch these videos about leadership, but I wasn't learning anything because I'm like, I have nothing to apply this to. So I think if you're in that leadership role, then it more makes sense to go to conferences and start to learn some of these tactics and stuff like that. But like you said, you learn by doing, especially when it comes to leadership, at least in my experience.
You can learn about every single framework in the world, but if you never utilize them, then who cares? And you can't even, you're not going to recall
it. You're not going to understand what the framework means.
And you're not going to say like, oh, this framework in this situation does this. It doesn't really work out that way, right? But if you say, okay, I'm going to take this framework and I'm going to try it out. I'm going to use it in this situation and see how I can make it work. And if it works in this situation, I can kind of build that into my view of how I do leadership and kind of like say, these things work, these things don't work. In these situations, I'll kind of do this, do that. And then you kind of move on and keep the things you learned from that and the things you used that worked well, kind of move on and kind of get, and it's kind of a trial and error thing, right? Like you can learn all you want from other people's mistakes and like learn from other people's things. And that definitely helps, but it's never going to truly stick. What's the quote? The quote is basically, lessons not learned in blood will soon be forgotten. It's from a movie. And it basically, the idea is that like, if you don't truly learn it yourself, like it doesn't really mean anything. It's not going to stick and it's not going to like matter in the end. So you have to actually learn by doing. And people all the time will try to keep you from making the same mistakes that they did. But the mistakes that they did is what got them where they're at, right? I've talked to plenty of people that have made huge mistakes that are like, just don't do this and you'll be fine. But and that was the one mistake that they made that like, looking back on it, they're like, oh, if I wouldn't have made that mistake, I wouldn't be where I'm at. I would be way farther than where I'm at today. But if they wouldn't have made that mistake, they wouldn't have been in the game. They wouldn't have never even got to where they're at today, right? And so the idea is like you have to make those mistakes. You have to do those things. You have to take action. And like learning and learning and learning is only going to get you so far. And at some point, it keeps you. I keep saying this. Like knowledge is a liability to some extent, right?
Can be a crutch.
Because the more you know without doing, the more you're going to be afraid of. Like the more that's scary, the more that keeps you from doing it in the first place. Because the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And so now there's all the things you don't know that you're like scared of that like, ah, now I need to know this and I need to understand this. I need to know this without ever starting in the first place. And it's like the whole mid-twit meme of like the first person that's like just dumb and just like does it gets so much farther than the person that's in the middle that's like, ah,
overthinking.
Like, I need to figure out this and this and this and this. And there's 27 steps and I have to do all this and make this all perfect. When in reality, you just have to start and then like you'll figure it out.
The person
who's
the high IQ end of that meme is
realize like, yeah, you just have to start it. Like you just have to go and do it and like you'll learn.
Yeah.
Right. And just like, I need to know what I need to know for this step only. And I do this step and then I realize the next step.
I can see that applying on so many different ways too. Like literally this database that I'm building, literally today's topic for me was just hydration, understanding water and hydration. Then that spiraled into, okay, heavy metals, and now I have to figure out tap water is good or not. Then that spiral into hard versus soft water and things like that. And it could have been so intimidating because I'm like, okay, water just seemed like such a small little topic, and now there's a million topics I could build off of it. But it's just like getting that first article done, and then from there, taking that step forward. Also something to connect back to something earlier we said. The guy on the wall there, Napoleon, one of the greatest leaders, military leaders of all time for a few reasons. So this could be a cool case study to like look into. One, he was always at the very front of the battlefield. So everyone talks about like Mayweather and for some context, like these people who like have insane records in like sports. This man, I don't remember his exact record, Napoleon's, but he went like 47-2, always with an outnumbered army. So the morale always should have been low, but he always led from the front. He kept morale so high. Another little thing that he would do, he would remember very specific little things about soldiers. So he would know their wives' names or that their kids play a certain sport or things like that. And so they all got aligned on the same vision because they wanted to fight for this one leader and like his team or his army of France. And basically they ended up taking over all of Europe like five different times. But that's a little side tangent, but that's another thing, just like leading by example in order to get that shared vision across and inspiring by basically putting yourself in front.
Yeah, I think it's something you said earlier, like, you know, you can, without doing, it's never going to stick, right?
Yeah.
You're never going to, like, you can learn all you want about Napoleon and how he led and how he did this, learning from the front, like leading from the front and all that stuff, but like.
But once you have something to apply it to, then these maxims and things actually start to make sense.
And you're like, oh, okay, like I knew that, but I didn't know it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I cognitively, like intellectually understood what you're saying, but it didn't hit me.
But if you can't contextualize it to something that you've been through or something that you can apply it to, it's essentially useless.
Yeah, you kind of hit this point where you're like, whoa, that's what they meant.
Yeah.
Like I knew it, but I didn't know it. So that's kind of interesting. That's something I've gained out of after being out of college. Like, I definitely think looking back on college that I think I took advantage of like the opportunities that I had in order to do things. But like, there's always more, right? There's always more. Like having a project in college that you can just like skate by and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you had like actually done a project, I think of back to an example. We had a real estate class in college where you had there was a property that you could buy basically, like in a made up world, right? You're buying it and you're doing a business plan. You have to say like, this is why we think we're going to buy it. And this is why this is what we expect to make from it, blah, 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 whatever. And most people just like made a bajillion assumptions. And like, we did the same thing, right? We were in a project together. We just made a bajillion assumptions. And, like, this makes sense.
The laundromat.
Instead, you could have actually like taken that and run with it and said like, I have this opportunity to actually learn by doing and like reach out to the broker and get all this market information, do all this and this and this and this, and then you'd actually like have done it before. So that now if you actually want to go buy a laundromat or something, you could like...
Dude, there's another hidden lesson in that too. Your tag as a college student, if you're in college, is actually way more valuable than you think. And I've realized this now post-grad, where if I'm on a... Like if I'm trying to sell something, for example, with this software, and I say, hey there, I'm actually a student at the University of Illinois trying to do some research on how... like plumbers kind of automate their sales and things like that. They'll be like, oh yeah, more than willing to help, you know? As a college student, you have this little pass where you can reach out to anyone and ask for anything, and you're not going to get everything, but you will get a lot of leeway with people who want to help you out and people who want to see you succeed. The second you become a real adult, it's like, all right, like get out of here. Like there's kids that could be helping.
Another thing I'll say with that is like, it's so easy when you're in college to find yourself thinking, they're like, oh, all these other kids in college, all they do is like booze every night and like don't actually do anything or care that much about their future or whatever. And you're like, yeah, I'm actually doing something for myself. Like, I'm awesome. And then you get in the real world. Now you're like, wow, now instead of thinking this pool of people that you're like, quote unquote, competing with is like the couple thousand people in like the biz school or whatever, or like in your major.
Against everyone.
Now you're competing against everyone. And like the things you thought like you were special about is like, you're not special anymore.
Yeah,
right?
Like the first thing that I started to sell was basically loyalty programs for restaurants, where someone would come into the restaurant, they would scan a QR code on the front desk by the cashier that says, hey, when's your next birthday? We have a special surprise for you. And then the customer would fill out a form that has their first name, birthday, and phone number. And they get a text immediately saying, hey, you're now entered into this coffee shop's loyalty program. And now this coffee shop can basically send out text message blasts to their entire contact list whenever about new seasonal items, promotions, a Valentine's Day, come in with your spouse and get 20% off. Like they could ask for review requests. And I thought I was so innovative with this because I don't see it at many coffee shops, right? Turns out there's a million other even more sophisticated loyalty programs that can actually integrate with the POS software that have reached out to these companies for even cheaper, and they're still not accepting them. So now I'm coming in thinking that I'm different because they don't have a loyalty program, even though they've been pitched by 10 other loyalty programs that could be even better than mine. So yes, you realize that you're not just competing with the small pool, or if you have like one little idea, there's a lot of people out there hungry for the same things that you're hungry for. And it's a cool wake-up call, let's just say that.
Yeah, I feel like there's so many stages in life where I start out at the beginning of, and I'm like, I'm nothing. Like, I don't know anything. I'm literally nothing compared to the people that are like a couple steps ahead of me. And I need to get out where they're at. And so I'll just grind like so hard to get, learn everything I can, get as far. I mean, same in college. I was a freshman in college. I didn't know anything about business. I didn't know about consulting. I didn't know about accounting. I didn't know about banking. I didn't know anything. I just thought business was like, I don't know, some whatever. I didn't even know what it was. And then a couple years later, like fast forward, I look back and all the people that I was like, these people are amazing. Like, I'm looking up to them so much. And I'm like, oh, yeah, they're pretty just regular, like, whatever, right? And so I think I'm special. Like, oh, yeah, I'm awesome. And then I get to a new stage of life, and
I'm like, see these new people.
Now I'm nothing, and I have to, like, grow. And it's kind of, I mean, honestly, treadmill. I like that to an extent, right? Because it keeps giving you, like, a new goal to catch, right? Mm-hmm. And a new thing to reach for, and it gives you new motivation to, like, keep going and going and going. I mean, eventually you kind of need to, like, pump the brakes and be like, okay, it's a very okay.
Tough,
like,
balance to strike.
I am enough as I am. Like, I still like the, like, growing thing, whatever, but, like, it's okay. I can relax. But to get you where you want to be, like, guess, like, the way of life, right? Competition is awesome to some extent, right? And, like, seeing all those people around you that, like, you look, oh, wow, these people are so amazing. I need to get to where they're at. And, like, realizing that, like, okay, I'm not as special as I think I am, and, like, being humbled, and then, like, getting to the next level, and, like, you get to the top of that, like, kind of near the edge of the top of that level, and you're like, yeah, I'm awesome. And then, like, you break to the next level, and you're like, whoa, I'm nothing again, because there's, like, a whole new step of the ladder to climb, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like one of those things where in each stage of life there's a goal, and once you get to, like, the edge of that goal, you start to think that you're like, I made it. And then what happens is you break that goal and you realize there's just another one on the next step.
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot, and it's been a tough thing to balance of, like, this hedonic treadmill of, if I achieve X, then I'll be happy, right? Or when I achieve X, I'll be happy. And then you go and achieve that new level of people who you used to look up to, and now you're like, okay, I have a whole new if this, then that, then I'll be happy. And that's just a treadmill.
But what you do is you get to the end of that, and you realize that the whole time it wasn't about getting somewhere to be happy. It's that the getting there in itself is what makes you happy, right? Like, so that's what you get the enjoyment from. Like, the journey itself is way better than the destination.
Yeah.
Right? It's like the enjoyment of the chase mm-hmm. is, like, way better than the kill.
I agree. You know? And for me, the mindset I've had that's helped me kind of still be very content while pushing forward is, like, instead of just looking at, like, my achievements, it's like the type of person I've become. I've become a much more confident person. And here's the thing. You can look at these other... Yes, there's always going to be people like your age and younger that have achieved so much more than you. Great. But if you look at all these, like, people that have made it and they're like 40 or something like that, number one, would I trade my life with theirs? Absolutely not. I would not try and give up.
Would you
up
take
20
a million,
years.
$10 million tonight to not wake up tomorrow?
Exactly. No way, right? And then there's also some confidence that's like, okay, I wonder where they were at when they were 20 years old. I feel like I'm on a good trajectory where I'm confident in the growth patterns and the type of person that I'm becoming in order to achieve those maybe a little later in life, which is fine. But it's like both looking forward and looking back at the same time. It's definitely a tough balance to strike, but an interesting one to grapple with.
Yeah, I think it's good to have, like, you know, in general, like, maybe 80% of the time or something, like, that drive to, like, reach the next level, right? And then the 20% of the time of being like, you know what? Celebrating the small wins. Like, you know, I made it on this set. Like, you know, it's Friday and I made it my first week of work, whatever. Like, let's go celebrate. Whatever it is, right? Celebrating the small things is important. And then being at peace of, like, this is who I am. This is where I'm at now. And I'm like, I'm at peace with that. And, like, nothing else matters. But then also being like, okay, now back to work and, like, getting the next thing, right? Yeah. So having that balance is, like, almost near impossible. But, like, in my opinion, the chase is, like, what makes it so special. And then also celebrating the times when you do reach it. Because the easy thing to do is just be, like, either extreme of being, like, oh, I like, don't have to do anything. I'm like, everything's, like, awesome. I'm, like, life is good, whatever. And, like, nothing matters. And I can just, like, party all day and, like, not have to actually work for anything I get. The other side is, like, do hard thing after hard thing after hard thing and then never take the time to be, like, you know what? Like, I did a good job. And so being somewhere in the middle of being like, you know what, I did a good job, but I'm also not just going to, like, take the easy way out and just take, like, the easy path of, like, do DoorDash every day and, like, life is good, like, whatever.
Yeah, dude. You know what? Actually, this makes me tear up a little bit. Another thing that I've realized this summer is, like, the chase is great, but also when you have so many failure after failure after failure, and then you look at where you are now. It's so cool. So when I went to, like, Larry Geese's conference for his company summer in July, there's one guest speaker there. He was actually, like, a military guy. And he said, he showed us a resume on the screen. And it was, like, a whole bunch of failures. It was a failure resume is what he called it. It was a really cool activity where he wrote down all the things he got rejected from, all the things that, like, he basically failed at. And we're like, We didn't know it was him. We didn't know it was the speaker, because all we knew was the speaker was super successful. He was a McKinsey partner at one point in time. He was a platoon leader, and he had all these crazy things, right? And he was showing us this resume, and we didn't know whose it was. And then he's like, that was me. And then he made all of us actually write down our failures on a sheet. I remember, and they said, turn to the person next to you and like share that list. The guy to the right of me shared like three things. He said he couldn't make his high school baseball team and like two other things. He failed to meet some target in a company. And then I pulled out this list of like 28 different failures. And I remember reading that thing and I'm like, this guy thinks I'm a complete like dud for sure. But every single one of those failures led to something even greater later on. And it was the coolest feeling. So when you go through those obstacles, just know that that just makes the victory and the rewards on the other side all that much more gratifying, you know? So if you do feel like you are taking all these risks and you're not getting anywhere, that's honestly should be even more fuel to keep on going, because it's just going to feel more special on the other side.
Yep. And if you try as hard as you can, you might fail. You might not make it, right? I want to be an A-list actor. Might not happen. Might not be in the cards. But if I give up today and I don't go for it, literally it's impossible to be in the cards. It's never going to happen, 100%. No one just accidentally like slips and falls and like trips into a
0.1%
becoming like an A-list actor and like falling into the next like Avengers Endgame movie or whatever. I mean, whatever, The Rock, right?
But that's like
0.1%. No, but it wasn't, because he grinded his whole like...
Wasn't he like playing football, and he wanted to be a pro football athlete? That was a complete failure, and then he ended up becoming one of the like richest people in the world. Like,
but what I'm saying is, if you give up, you literally have a 0% chance,
yeah,
of making it. If you don't give up, maybe it's 80, maybe it's 70, maybe it's 50, but it's a lot better than 0%. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, it's just like, yeah. Failure sucks, but it makes the winning so much better. And yeah, you might fail, but
and you won't regret
you'll
it.
Never win. You'll never, ever, ever win if you don't play the game.
Yeah.
And if you don't show up to the state championships, you're not going to win the game. It just doesn't, I mean, who wins the game with nobody on the field? It doesn't happen. Like, it doesn't work that way. And so you got to show up, you got to be there, and you got to keep going. And like, you might fail, but you have a lot better odds. And if you don't try.
Yeah. And I guess we'll leave it with Tony Robbins' quote. The pain of discipline weighs ounces. The pain of regret weighs tons. So just go for it. All right. Wow. So this turned from our life updates into a Tony Robbins
quote. A motivational speech.
Well, there we go. Those are the best kinds of pods. Dude, I've missed this. Seriously. It's good to have you back here. All right, we're going to convince Jacob to move to Chicago so we could do more of these in-person pods, but I doubt it'll be... Actually, we could see within the year.
Yeah, and if you made it this far...
Thank you.
Wow, thank you. But also, please reach out, because it's hard to do a podcast and just speak out into the void and say, just like, leave it there, because who knows what people think about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, let us know.
All right, we are making Jacob wake up at 5 a.m. to come on a run with us to the Calisthenics Park, so we are going to call it right now, 9:30. Good night.
All right, good night. See ya.